just one quick point before that. The 15th verse, the different acharyas have given different hierarchy for that. Srila Prabhupada explains, ekatvena puthaktvena bahudha avishvato mukham. What is the category of people? Those who worship themselves as God, they worship the demigods as representations of God, pratikopasaks, and those who worship the Vishwarup. So now Prabhupada explains that among these, the hierarchy is this way. Ekatvena is the lowest, Prutaktvena Bahudha is higher, and Vishwatamukham is highest. So Vishwanathaka Thakur explains the hierarchy to the opposite way. He says that Ekatvena is the highest, Prutaktvena Bahudha is second highest, and Vishwatamukham is lowest. So why this difference? Like yesterday I explained that there is the material philosophical perspective and there is the devotional perspective. From the material perspective, the Mayavadis are higher than normal people because they are in goodness, they are having renunciation. So the normal people are all over here in goodness, passion, and goodness. The Mayavadis are dwelling in goodness. So they are higher. But from the devotional perspective, because they are envious and more envious of Krishna than others, even the common people are considered better than Mayavadis. So now, both perspectives have their own rights, and ultimately, the standing and destination of a Mayavadi will be determined by his own consciousness, which the super soul knows. So similarly, with respect to this, basically, from the analytical or philosophical perspective, from the Prutaktve, Vishwatomukham, oh, God means he must be very, very great. So let me worship big, big objects as representatives of God. That is a very preliminary understanding. And beyond that, oh, God must be some higher reality. Beyond. So let me worship that as some representation. It's a higher understanding that God is not just nature, God is something beyond nature. And let me have some representation of that, let me worship. And beyond that, God is pure spirit and I am that spirit. So that means the understanding is evolving from matter towards spirit more and more clearly, along with the understanding of one's own spiritual identity. A person who are nature worshippers, they may have no understanding of their spiritual identity. So, in that sense, from the philosophical perspective, it's higher this way. That, so the ekatvena are higher. This is the perspective that Vishwanathaka Thakur takes. So the Prabhupada explains this from the opposite perspective, because from the devotional perspective, the important thing is, see, in jnana, it is very, very important to understand the difference between matter and spirit. This is matter, this is spirit. In bhakti, more important than understanding the difference between matter and spirit is to understand the difference between spirit and supreme spirit, between soul and super soul. Yes, to be stable in bhakti also, I have to understand the difference between matter and spirit. But more important is, now Prabhupada rarely, the impersonalists quote, aham brahmasmi a lot. Vaishnavas will quote, Jivara Swarupa Krishna Nityadas. That is more important. So, from the devotional point of view, the understanding the difference between worshipper and worshipped has to be highlighted. So, in the case of monists, those who worship themselves as God, but they have no understanding of that difference. And therefore, they are considered the lowest. Then, those who understand that supreme reality is somewhere there, and there are representations which are worshipped. So, at least they are understanding that, okay, there is some worshipable God whom I have to worship through his representations. And then, one understands at Vishwatamukham that God is not just there as some representations, God is everywhere. So God is all pervading reality. And in that sense, this is higher. So, from the devotional perspective, what Srila Prabhupada is telling is precise. So, now we have to understand ultimately that the differences between the acharyas, whenever they are there, they are on matters of detail. They are never on matters of principle. So, now even among the four sampradayas, there are some differences. But, Dayanand Maharaj writes in his Searching for Vedic India, that the differences between the sampradayas don't matter because they are of subjects beyond the world of matter. They are a very transcendental subject and they don't really matter at the level that we are at. And the intelligence and passion always try to highlight differences and people quarrel on those differences. And intelligence and goodness tries to see the unity. So we should minimize those differences. So the differences between the acharyas, I think I mentioned this example earlier, are like the differences in the detail of how to serve Krishna. But the acharyas have no difference with the principle of serving Krishna. Just like there may be a difference between Yudhishthir and Bhima of what to do with Ashwatthama. And there is a difference between Bhima and Duryodhana of what to do before the Kurukshetra war. So now, between Yudhishthir and Bhima is only a matter of detail. How to serve Krishna in this particular situation that Ashwatthama has committed this crime. But in the case of Bhima and Duryodhana, it's an entire difference of principle only, whether to serve Krishna or not. So, all the Vaishnavacharyas, they make you different, interpretations. Different translations, different insights. But all of them are meant to deepen our appreciation and relish of Krishna consciousness. So, because they are all one in purpose, then now how is it possible that somebody can have Navanavarasa Dhamanya Uddhutamanta Santumasi? One gets new rasas. It's possible when one gets new insight into Krishna's beauty and Krishna's nature, Krishna's glory. So different acharyas are relishing Krishna's qualities in different ways and they are speaking it to us. So Krishna is unlimited and no one acharya, no matter how great he is, can fully describe Krishna's glories. So different acharyas taste Krishna's glories and Krishna's words from different, but their conclusion is to glorify Krishna. The Mayavadis, they may also say, we are also giving our interpretation. But their interpretation is defeating the purpose of Krishna. So, that's why the acharya's differences have to be understood in perspective. There is just a different way of understanding the unlimited nature of unlimited wisdom inherent in Krishna's words. But unlimited doesn't mean that the wisdom just is like a open-ended wisdom with no inherent meaning in it. So it is ultimately pointing to surrender to Krishna. So now we start with the demigod worshippers. So Krishna is basically doing something similar to what he did in the 7th chapter, contrasting to glorify his pure devotees.
Traividyamam soma papauta papa yajnairishtva svargatim prarthayante te punyam asadya surendra lokam ashnanti divyan divideva bhogan.
Those who studied the Vedas, in the form of view, within the heavenly planet, worshipping in direction, purified of sinful reaction, they take birth on the spot of heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delight.
Traividya. So Rig, Sam and Yag Sam Yajurveda, which Krishna said earlier. So how it is, these Vedas have their purpose. The Rig Veda contains the invocatory prayers. Whenever Yajna is to be performed, the Rig Veda is used to invoke, oh God, please come. The Yajurveda contains the prayers which are chanted, the verses which are chanted, and the rituals which are performed while actually doing the sacrificial offering. And when the devatas come, they have to be praised. So Samveda contains its praises. So Atharveda contains a combination of all three. In that sense, sometimes it is considered a miscellaneous Veda and sometimes not mentioned. The word Traividya comes. So it's something similar. In a first, if we want to invite some preacher, we invite him. And when he comes, then we appreciate him. And then we serve him. So it's like that. So Rigveda is the invitation, the Yajurveda is the service, and the Samveda is the glorification, the appreciation. So Traividya, now Krishna is saying something very interesting. Traividya Mama Somapaha Putapapa Yagyair. So they are those who are worshipping me by doing the worship of the three Vedas. By following the three Vedas, what are they doing? They are doing Yagya, they are worshipping me. Traividya Mam Somapaha Putapapa. So Som is a special drink, it is like nectar. Some people misunderstand it to be intoxicant. But it is not an intoxicant in the mundane sense, it drags the person to tamaguna. It actually elevates one consciousness. So puta papa, that's why it is said, at the beginning of the song what happens? Puta papa, one becomes purified from papa. Yajnir ishtva, and they do yajna. So, now why are they doing the yajna? Svargatim prarthayante, to get svarga. Te punya masadya surendra lokan. So they get the punya, and they will get Surendra Lokan. Surendra is Indra. Ashnanti Divyan, Divideva Bhogan. So the word Divyan can mean divine or it can mean celestial. What is the difference between divine and celestial? Divine means especially spiritual. So, in Vedic, technically speaking, there is a difference between spiritual and celestial. Celestial is heavenly. Spiritual is belonging to a transcendental world. So here Divyan is used in the, not in the sense of Janma Karma Chini Divyam, here in the sense of celestial. Dividev Bhogan. So they will enjoy immense pleasures. And then what will happen after that? Next verse describes it.
Tetam bhuktva sargalokam vishalam kshetunye martilokam vishanti evam traidharma manu prapanna gatagatam kama kama labante.
So now Krishna is telling that these devatas, what do they get? They enjoy, but the time limit set to it. And when the time limit gets over, they fall back. So Balaji Devashi explains that when the scriptures say that the devatas' lives is amar, that is an exaggeration. That is an exaggeration which is true from the relative point of view. As compared to life over here, it is immortal. But from the point of view of eternity, it is very, very finite. And another sense, how it is called amar is, because nobody dies in heaven. When they have to die, they are sent out of heaven and then they die. So death is absent in heaven. It's like that's what Siddhartha Buddha's father did. You know, he tried to hide the reality of death from him. So yes, there were suffering people, there were sick people, there were dying people, but they were all out. We could not see them, so like that. So they will fall back to this earth. So gata agata, gata agatam kama kama labhant. They continue on the cycle of birth and death. Now Krishna will contrast this with his devotees. In the next verse.
Ananyas chintayanto ma ye jana paryupasate desha mityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham.
Yes. So, this verse has been an elaborate analysis on many of the acharyas, and one of the first points is, Krishna is not telling karomyaham. He says, vahamyaham. It's not that I will get it done. I will have it. I will arrange for the protection of my devotees. Vahamy means I will personally carry. So I will carry what they lack, and I will preserve what they have. The personal role is talking about. And you know the story of Arjuna Acharya? About how Krishna personally arranged for his provisions. Now, Arjuna, Vishwanatha Thakur envisions a monkey conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. So he says, Arjuna says, Krishna, you sustain the whole world. You are earlier saying that Masthani Sarvabhutani. You are maintaining all the worlds. So just as you are maintaining all the worlds, you maintain the universe also. What do we need to mention specially? No, he says, it's not similar. Actually, the world is maintained as a part of my duty. But I maintain all my devotees out of my love for them. And that's why the world is maintained by the super soul, by the Paramatma. But I maintain my devotees myself as Bhagavan. Because I love them so much. So then Arjuna says, you know, you personally carry, like you said, you personally carry the your devotees as you are carrying the world. That is your love for your devotees. But how can your devotees hand over themselves to you and become a burden on you? He says, well, where is their love for you? He says, their love is that they are ananyas chintayantam, they are always thinking of me. They never think of becoming a burden on me, but they never think of becoming a burden, they never intend to become a burden on me, but I, and they are quite capable of taking care of themselves. But I, out of my love for me, love for them, carry them. And use the example, let's say a lover and beloved are going out for a meeting in a park or some place. There, you know, the beloved can walk on her own, but the lover just comes and sweeps her off her feet and carries her. He says, like that, my devotees can take care of themselves, but I personally carry them. Vahamyaham. Yogakshemam Vahamyaham. So, Srila Prabhupada himself is a demonstration of this. Srila Prabhupada had only 40 rupees and with that he went to America. And Krishna took care. And in fact, If you know the detail, actually Prabhupada came back with the 40 rupees. You know, when he came back to Delhi, it was Delhi, when they came from the airport to the Chippewaya temple, that time the rickshawala took the 40 rupees from Prabhupada. So, you know, Prabhupada practically did not take a single penny with him in the sense of having major plans. But Krishna provided so much for him. So, that is the meaning of how Krishna provides. Now, this, we also have the example of Srivas Thakur. How Lord Chaitanya said that even if the voice of fortune gets poverty stricken, still nothing will be in shortage for you. So now as devotees, a devotee never demands protection from the Lord. A devotee only focuses on service. And a devotee does not go out of his way to create danger for himself and demand protection. A devotee tries to focus on his service. And if the service requires some danger, service requires some problems, there is intense problem, the devotee knows that Krishna will provide. So, as devotees, we have these two sides. We have even the philosophical understanding and the practical understanding. So the philosophical understanding is that Krishna is always the provider. But the practical understanding is that we also have to show our endeavor to Krishna. So when we as devotees sometimes may go for fundraising or we may do some practical endeavors. Now, we understand that Krishna can do everything on his own. When we are doing it, it is just to show him our desire. So for us, when we do ourselves, Prabhupada said in a very beautiful lecture that actually the soul is so tiny. Ultimately, what can he do for Krishna? But he says, the only thing that Krishna sees is that this soul is using his time and energy in my service. So when we say Ananya Chintayantoma, for us, we cannot just sit and ananyas chintayantu, we can do. So our endeavor in Krishna's service is also a part of ananyas chintayantu. So it is not that we are defying Krishna or not having trust in Krishna when we say that we are trying to arrange for funds for our projects, we are running our material arrangements. Say for example when we go for yatra, you know, we arrange food. You know, is that lacking in dependence on Krishna? Not necessarily. It's the way we can serve Krishna. When we have yatra, cooking is such a big service. So, we will plan in advance for that. That doesn't mean that we are not depending on Krishna. For us, when we do any endeavor, it is not that we don't have faith in Yogakshema Mahamayam. It is that our endeavor is a part of doing Ananya Chintayantoma. Our endeavor is a part of fixing our mind on Krishna. And ultimately, whenever we are trying to do a major project, we see that our endeavors eventually, sometimes it comes, nothing seems to be happening, everything seems to be collapsing. And then Krishna shows how he actually is the doer. And he will make things happen. So, in that way, Jayapadaka Maharaj tells that when they were working for the Mayapur temple, at that time they were going again and again and again to get permissions and they are not getting any permissions only. And every day he was going, and it was completely getting frustrating again and again and again. One day he said he went in front of Prabhupada, that they had a picture of Prabhupada, they didn't have deities at that time, when Prabhupada was there on the planet. And he said, Prabhupada, you want this temple to be Mayapur developed, but nothing is happening over here. And he said, suddenly a thought came in my mind, why am I so worried about it? You know, Prabhupada wants this to happen, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wants it to happen, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wants to happen, let me not get discouraged, it is going to happen. And such a confidence came over me. And that day I went and the same people who were opposing permission suddenly miraculously they gave the permission. So ultimately, you know, when we just think that it's my endeavor, by my endeavor it will happen, then Krishna may check it. But when we understand that it is a higher desire and it's a higher plan, and we acknowledge that, then Krishna will make it happen. So as devotees, we have to do all that we can for serving Krishna. And that is the expression not of our lack of faith in Krishna's protection, but the expression of our serious desire to serve Krishna. So now Krishna will contrast this with the result of worshipping other devas. Correct. Can a devotee be elevated from the heavens upwards if he has deviated from the spiritual path? That is described in 6th chapter. So, a devotee goes to heaven primarily for getting rid through experience of the material desire that distracted him from the path of bhakti. Generally speaking, can experience help us get rid of material desires? Not necessarily. You know, materialistic people have so much experience of material enjoyment, but they don't get fed up with material enjoyment. But a devotee, because he has experienced the higher taste of Krishna bhakti, so he has experienced the higher taste of Krishna bhakti, but he is not really convinced that this is the higher taste. And he thinks that material enjoyment might be better. So then Krishna says, I'll give you as much material enjoyment as you want. You go to heaven and enjoy. And as compared to the higher taste of bhakti, that material enjoyment can never be satisfying. And so because the devotee has a higher taste, and that memory is there in the back of the mind, subconsciously at least, if not consciously, so the heavenly enjoyments completely disappoint and frustrate him. And then, by that repeated prolonged enjoyment, the devotee becomes convinced, there's no happiness over here. And then, from there, actually the heavenly plans are not very conducive for rapid spiritual advancement. And even if one goes further to the top three planetary systems, Tapaloka, Janloka, Satyaloka, there also they are conducive for spiritual advancement, but they are conducive for gradual spiritual advancement. You know, there it is called the sages, they enjoy the sense gratification of austerity. So, because the whole atmosphere is so sattvic, it's just sitting, you know, what is that? Pravala shobhai vadirgha kesha vatambu parnashin pute deha mule taruna minaya patanti govinda dama garma dhaveti. They describe that is sages, or rishis, dharvis, pravala shobhai vadirgha kesha. You know, they completely let their hair grow and completely liquidate the body. What do they eat? Vat ambu paranashana puta deha. Vat is air. They eat air, ambu is water, and parana is leaves. Vat ambu paranashana puta deha. And that is, by eating this, their body becomes purified. Puta deha. And mune taruna munaya patanti. So they sit under trees and they chant. Govinda damodara madhaveti. So, this is exalted level of devotion to be able to sustain on Vatamu Paranashan, but that is not the exact focus of a devotee, especially Gaudiya Vaishnava devotee. You want to actively, the Vrajavasis are actively engaged in Krishna's service. So that's why, generally from the heavens one doesn't go to the upper planets, a devotee, because upper planets are not so conducive for spiritual advancement. Comes back to earth, the earth is the Martyloka, the most conducive for spiritual advancement. Like that only, the seven story building, easiest to get out from here. From the upper planetary systems, one will have to wait till the end of Brahma's life. Then one will go back to the spiritual world. So Krishna doesn't want his devotees to wait for so long. Now, Vahamyaham, about this, Vahamyaham, he also quotes, Bandit Darshan Govinda Bhashya, he quotes the Varaha Puran. He says that Krishna says, I personally come to my devotee and pick him up and place him on Garuda next to me. And Vahamyaham, I take him back to the spiritual world. So he says that, so there he talks about this also in the 8th chapter. So he describes how there is the path of light and the path of darkness. So he says, why tell Arjuna, you don't worry about it? Because even a devotee can come to Krishna through the path of light. It will take a long time, Brahma Vidojana, can come. But he says, Krishna says, when my devotee starts loving me purely, for me, separation from him becomes unbearable. And I cannot wait for all the devatas to convey him to me. That's why I personally come, reveal my beautiful form to him and take him back to the spiritual world. So the relationship of Krishna with his devotees is in an entirely different dimension. Yes?
Since the concept of demigod worship is also here, I just wanted to clarify one thing. Now many people do demigod worship and they get temporary results also. So now my query is, suppose some person is destined that in this particular life he will get X amount of suffering and Y amount of enjoyment. But now by doing demigod worship, he is increasing his enjoyment. And also in next life, if he is going upwards, now purely his sinful activity cannot be countered by his this pious activity. So now what is going to happen? Is it like demigod worship can change someone's enjoyment or amount of suffering which he is going to face in this particular life?
Good question. Can demigod worship change somebody's destiny? Not exactly. whatever suffering a person is trying to get, that has to come. That cannot be avoided in one sense. There are some specific atonements which can do that, but not demigod worship specifically. But we also have to understand that destiny is not like a permanently fixed, unchangeable box. No, we are creating our destiny even now. So, that means, if now a person is supposed to be suffering, because of some sort of suffering, some accident or something like that, he's supposed to get it. And then a person does some demigod worship, he goes to astrologer. So an astrologer tells us, you know, this is a bad period for you, for Shani. Now, you wear this jewel or you do some puja, something like that. Then what happens by that is two things. First is that danger is warded off. It is not eliminated, it is warded off temporarily. So basically, the destiny is, the quantum is fixed, but the sequencing is not fixed. So what can come now, can come later. Okay, so it can be warded off temporarily. Another thing that happens is that demigod worship also constitutes punya. So that punya also gets added to his account. And that same suffering may come later. See, generally speaking, the suffering will come to us. But the magnitude of the suffering, we can worsen it by our present karmas. How does that happen? If somebody is supposed to meet an accident, like I told you earlier, the example of when the devotees were driving recklessly and they met with an accident, and the other devotees, it was their destiny. Prabhupada says it was their carelessness. So now it is both. But how it is that suppose somebody is meant to meet a road accident. Now, our reactions will come anyway. But the extent to which we suffer depend on which modes we are in presently. Suppose somebody insults me. If I am goodness, I will just shake it off. If I am passion, I will get woken up. If I am in ignorance, I will want to hit him back again. You know? So the whole magnitude, like I had asked Arana this question in the Daksha Prajapati Lila, first Shiva was offended, and that's why he cursed, Nandi cursed the Brahmanas. I mean, the Brahmanas cursed him back. So, we understand at one level the mistake was of Daksha. It all originated from Daksha. But then, you know, was it a mistake for the for Nandi and other followers of Shiva to counter curse? Because for them, Shiva is a like guru, and they cannot just stand by and watch Guru Aparad. So, Maharaj told me that actually we have to, certainly if our spiritual master is offended, we have to respond. But we should, use our intelligence to respond in a way that improves the situation, not worsens the situation. So yes, there is a principle that we should not passively hear the offense of the spiritual master. But if just a valid reaction is going to worsen the matters, is that a service to the spiritual master? No. So, you know, that means, yes, there may be a particular thing which is going to happen to us, a particular course of action that is recommended for us. But how we react is important. So suppose I am supposed to meet the accident. But if I am living in goodness and I am driving at not a very fast rate, the accident may be minor. If I am driving in passion or ignorance, you know, recklessly, then now I may just increase the magnitude of my accident. So now, suppose we get a particular reaction. You know, we don't have to argue like we are telling you what he saw one young boy. He was driving zigzag like crazy. So they came to a red signal and he also came in his car. So he took out his card and gave him. He says, I'm an orthopedic surgeon. The way you are driving, you'll soon need me. So, Guru was instructing. So, the point is that, you know, there is the causal connection between our what we get right now and our past deeds. But there is also a causal connection between what we do now and our reaction. You know, if I get a stomach upset, you know, first I have to look for the inner connection. Have I overeaten? You know, I can't say that I've got whatever I eat, my reaction is because of some past karma. What can I do? You know, if I'm getting a disease, see, normally there are, you know, normally the law of karma, as he says, is gahana. But there are, if there is an immediate cause that can explain a situation, one doesn't have to necessarily imagine that there has to be a secondary cause. Or rather, having a secondary cause doesn't mean that one doesn't have to investigate a primary cause. Like we say, that if somebody insults us, we should not be angry with the instrument of our karma. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that we should find out why that person is angry with me. Did I do something wrong? If I did something wrong, I have to avoid that. So we have to work at both levels. Because when we are practicing, we don't know what is the exact cause. Whether it is the immediate stimulus or whether it is something long term. Generally speaking, we observe a one-to-one correlation, at least a rough level, in our life. Now somebody smokes and he gets lung cancer. So in general there is a correlation. In general, actions have their reactions and many times we see them in this very life. But there are exceptions that somebody may smoke and smoke and smoke, may not get cancer, because by his past life's punya, he is destined to have a healthy body in this life. Whatever happens. On the other hand, somebody may never smoke or smoke with lung cancer. Why? Because by his past karma, he is meant to have a sinful life. Get to sickly body. But this doesn't mean that the smoking is not consequential. So whenever we have to trace back the cause of a particular suffering, let us look for an immediate cause. And if you can't find an immediate cause, then you understand it's a remote cause, which we don't know about. The same way, just as we can avoid a sickness. Suppose now we go for a yatra, at that time, you know, we arrange for the preventive medicines. Prophylactic medicine we give, anti-malaria and things like that. Now we can say that if you sustain, you are all going to get malaria. Why should you do prophylactic medicine? So it is our duty to do whatever we can to prevent suffering. So just as this can be done, immediately similar astrology or Anga worship can also be done to avoid the karmic reactions coming upon us. So demigod worship does not ward it off. See, in spite of taking the medicine, still some people may get malaria. And some people may not take the medicine, still not get malaria also. But that doesn't, so the exceptions don't disprove general rule. General rule exists, and because every individual is specific, there will be exceptions according to one specific karma and the way the karmic reactions are supposed to come. That's why, then just as we can have ordinary medical means to ward off suffering, there can be subtler means of demigod worship, atonement, and other astrological related rituals, which can also be used to ward off suffering. As devotees, our acharyas don't recommend that. Our acharyas don't recommend worshipping the demigods. They say whatever we can get from Krishna, we should be satisfied with that. But the principle is the same. One is gross material technique, the other is subtle material technique. So we adopt the gross material technique because our acharyas have told us to. Prabhupada himself would take medicine, so we take medicines. But, you know, our acharyas never, when they had some sufferings, when that ghost was coming on Bhaktivinoda Thakur, spirit, he did not go to exorcist. He just said the Bhagavatam. That's why if something like that happens, a devotee does not go to the demigods. But that is also valid material means of not entirely eliminating suffering, but reordering our karma, at least temporarily staving off the suffering. Okay? Related to this? Okay, wait, you can ask, yeah. See, it's a good question. You know, sometimes called destiny, astrology suddenly uttered. So there's a devotee friend of mine who is writing a book on astrology. So this, the title of the book is calling it as How to Mess Your Life with Astrology. So what he was telling me is that, like in some people's karma, in destiny it may be written that they are supposed to have two marriages. You have one marriage, people have two marriages in their destiny also. So what happens, now if some person is having some marital problems, you know, husband wife and I are getting along, they go to astrologer, and the astrologer, actually, you know, you are supposed to have two marriages. And then they use it to justify getting a divorce. So now in traditional Ayurveda and traditional circles, there are ways. Now suppose someone is to have two marriages, and what they do is, they perform a ritual by which the person's first marriage is a tree. To get a person married to a tree. And that particular thing used to happen, so the whole ritual happens and it's over. So that doesn't mean that one has to physically have two spouses. It can be, so there are ways in which even in Ayurveda this can be avoided. Astrology. Astrology is what? Jyotisha. it is also Kali Yuga, not Ayurveda. So similarly, now if what is destined can be minimized or avoided, even astrology, then what to speak of in bhakti? Bhakti is far more powerful. So, you know, as devotees, we all want to get married to Krishna. So Krishna is our eternal pati. Patim patinam tatam parastha, he said. So, you know, if you become fixed in our devotional service to Krishna, then all these past karmic effects can be avoided. Now, if somebody is not fixed in Krishna, then he may have some difficulties. But those difficulties can be used as an incentive for becoming more fixed in Krishna. You know, that's what happens, somebody comes to know. Somebody becomes a brahmachari and then he goes to astrologer. And the astrologer, you're 30, you're going to get married. Then by the time he's 30, he's already looking for a girl to marry. And then he finds somebody and he says, oh, I have to get married now. So, it's like Abal Mishimar. It's like we create suffering for ourselves. So in general, within ISKCON, because Prabhupada sometimes referred to astrology, but he never emphasized it. For example, Prabhupada followed one thing, according to astrology, one should not travel on Thursday. So Prabhupada generally would not plan any long-term travel on Thursday. But if unexpectedly some preaching evangelism would come up, he would still go, whether it was Thursday or any day. So Prabhupada did not make or always tell that you have to follow astrology. So that's why some disciples may just consult astrologers, and they may arrange certain things according to astrology. Some disciples of Prabhupada rarely have never considered astrology. So, as far as I know, our spiritual master doesn't recommend astrology at all for brahmacharis. And for grahasthas, he leaves it to them. You know, when the marriage matches are to be there. If the boy and girl want, as their families want, then they can look for astrology match. But we don't consider it necessary. And therefore, we have to follow our spiritual master. And there's no need for us to bother. And generally speaking, you know, what is the difference between, say, medicine, ordinary allopathic medicine, and say astrological worship of certain devatas? Actually, we know that material medicine is simply medicine. But when we follow astrology and worship some other demigods, what happens is that distracts us from our bhakti. But you know, if I go to a doctor, that is not going to weaken my faith in Krishna. But if I go to astrology and astrology to worship Shani, and if before that I have been chanting Hare Krishna, my problem doesn't go away. And then I worship Shani and my problem goes away. Yeah, Shani worship is good. Isn't it? It's not like that. It's only Krishna sanction. That's why, you know, Krishna is the father of Shani also. But Krishna is testing us. Do you still have faith in me or do you want to have faith in somebody else? Therefore, as devotees, we don't recommend astrology at all. Okay? Yes, please. Yeah. Correct, it's not. No, taking medicine is not a pious karma. I was only giving the example that how in this life also doing certain prescribed activities can seem to have an influence of countering suffering. If I don't take the medicine, I will suffer. If I take the medicine, I don't suffer.
So, just warding off the suffering?
Because, no, I wouldn't put it like that. Because there is an example given in both in 10th canto, when Vasudeva is trying to protect Devaki, as well as in the 8th canto, when Shukracharya is instructing Bali Maharaj, that you know, this body is like a tree. And only when you have the body, only when the tree is living, will it give the fruits. So similarly, only when the body is alive, can we get the fruits of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and even Moksha. So protecting the body is a duty of a person. So that means, just as, say, if a person is a householder, and he doesn't take care of his dependents, that's a negligence of his duty, which will constitute a bad karma, which will give a reaction. Similarly, if I have been given a body by Krishna right now, and if I neglect it, then that is a negligence of duty on my part right now. That's a bad karma and that will bring a reaction. So it's not that taking medicine is a punya, but not doing the needful take care of the body is also negligence. The same principle when extended, suicide is considered to be sinful. Why? Suicide is considered sinful because we have not been given this body and we can't use it, we have no right to destroy it. So just as we don't have the right to destroy the body by suicide, we don't have a right to neglect this body and its care just because of our own whimsical mind. Is it clear? Yeah. Let's move forward. You would like to add something? So, we were discussing? Okay, we discussed Ananyashchintayantama, how Krishna protects. Now let's go to now Krishna is basically what he is doing, teaching by contrast. So he said that I will protect my devotees, I will carry on to what they have. So the devatas, the worshipper of devatas, or my indirect worshippers, what happens is they get, but then they lose. You see, my devotees, whatever they get, they have forever. And then Arjuna is asking, why the difference? No, even they are ultimately worshipping you, and your devotees are also worshipping you. Why the difference? Krishna explains the next three verses. Yetyanya devata bhakta yajante shraddhayanvita kirtina ameva kaunteya yajantya vidhi purvakam. So, they worship only me, but avidhipurvakam. So, Prabhupada gives an example that the stomach has to be given food through the mouth, not through any of the other holes. So, this conversation with Mr. Patel. Swamiji, sometimes when a person is sick, you know, he can be fed into the anus. So, that is when he is sick, Prabhupada says. So, the Nigar worship is for sick people. So, it's avidhipurvakam. That is not the normal way to do it. So, Prabhupada is brilliant. The normal way is to worship Krishna. So, they were sick. Yes, there are abnormal ways, but that is not the standard. Now, Krishna says, so, what is the avidhipurvakam? What is it? Is it lacking? What is the lacking? That Krishna will tell you next verse. So, next verse is expansion of avidhipurvakam. Agami sarva yajnanam bhokta cha prabhureva cha tumam abhijananti tatve natascha vantite. Yes. So, Krishna is told in 3.9, yajna arthat karmanamatra. Do the work for the sake of yajna. But that time he didn't explicitly mention who is the yajna pati. Here is me, aham, he is emphasis, certainly. And very anambuous, sarva yajnanam. Sarva yajnanam means, even the yajnas that are apparently meant for Indra or Chandra or Vishnu or Surya or whoever, I am the ultimate enjoyer. Bhokta cha prabhurevacha. I am the enjoyer, I am the master. And one who doesn't know this, he will fall back. So what is the falling back compared to? Krishna is saying that he will do yajnas, he will go to heavens, he will fall back. So that was what he was describing in 21st verse, falling back. That's what Krishna is elaborating over here. And then next verse he will tell that then if people don't know me, what is the result they will get? According to their modes. Yanti devavrata devan pitrun yanti pitruvataha bhutani yanti bhutejya yanti matyajunopima.
Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. And those who worship me will live with me.
So, worship of devas is goodness. Worship of pitras is passion. Worship of bhutas is ignorance. And worship of Krishna is transcendence. Now we also heard that the worship of Vishnu is in goodness, worship of Brahma is in passion, worship of Shiva is in ignorance. Then how do we understand that worship of Devata is in goodness? Now in the 17th chapter Krishna will mention clearly, a fourth verse, Yajante Satvika Devan Yaksha Rakshamsi Rajasam Pretan Bhutagunan Chanye Yajante Tamasajana. So the same hierarchy Krishna is telling over there. So that means that just like we say that cow is in goodness, elephant is in ignorance, even his passion. And say donkey or monkey or they are in ignorance. So now, in general, all animals are in ignorance. In Gajendra, when he is praying to the Lord, he says, I have got this body which is in ignorance. So please, now that you have come, don't just save me from this crocodile, save me from this ignorance of the animal body that I have. So, India, so that means, it's like, you know, this is the broad classification of goodness, passion, ignorance. But, when we say of cow is in goodness, it is within ignorance, there is the strategy. Goodness, passion, ignorance. So, within ignorance, you say that means the cow is in ignorance, goodness. Elephant is in ignorance, passion. And monkey is in ignorance. So like that, worship of the devatas in general is in goodness. Because to understand the principle that there is some higher power whom I need to worship, that requires some goodness. But within that goodness, whom I choose to worship? So worship of Vishnu is goodness, goodness. Worship of Brahma is goodness, passion. And worship of Shiva and Mahakali and others is goodness, ignorance. So it's a further classification within that. So after this, yeah? No, Pindadan is only one small way. And Pindadan is an obligatory duty which every son has to perform. Worship of the Pitras means one makes the Pitras themselves the ancestral objects of worship. So in Japan there is a religion called Shintoism. And Shintoism primarily they worship ancestors. So in India also it is there, but it is not exactly worship. We put the pictures of all the ancestors sometimes on this. All these people tell like that. So Sridhar Mahadev was telling, you know, he went to a person's house. So the great-great-grandfather was, you know, complete shikha, tilla, dhoti kurta. And then the grandfather was, the hair was there, the tilak was there, but dhoti kurta had been replaced by shirt pant. And then the father was there. The father of tilak was gone, had complete shirt pant and complete big hair was there. And the son was, living son was there. He was there with t-shirt, jeans, and complete with Western goggles. This is degeneration of generation. So, sometimes people worship the ancestors. So, when they worship the ancestors, that is, Pindadan is a ritual which everybody has to perform. That is, worship of ancestors means one makes that as a one's object of worship and focuses all of one's worship on that. It's different. So now, Krishna will come back to the subject of pure devotional service. And he will describe, so he's contrasted demigod worship with his own pure devotion in one way now, that one gives eternal result, the other gives temporary result. Now he will highlight the difference, he will tell one more point. How easy it is to worship me as compared to worship the devas. You know, there are huge yajnas already performed. Whereas to worship me, patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachyati tadaham bhakti upaharitam ashtani prayatatmanah.
If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit or water, I will accept it.
Yes. So, here we know there are several deep points. The word bhaktya is used twice. And it's used patram, it's not patrani. Singular. Even one leaf is enough. And Krishna says, Ashnami, so I will accept it. So this verse is very indicative of deity worship. Because how will people offer to the sky? No. Madhyaji also considered under the Bhagavata, which is also indicative of deity worship. So this is very clear. You have to offer, it is offering to a deity. Now, here Krishna is talking about, the emphasis is pure devotion. If there is devotion, then there is even very simple offerings are very pleasing to Krishna. And he also says, Prayatatmanah. Prayatatmanah means a pure soul or one who is trying to be pure. So yes, it's very simple. And if one has devotion, but one has devotion and one also try to do everything in a very clean and pure way. So the purity can refer to internal purity of the heart. It can also refer to external cleanness when the internal purity of the heart is lacking. And Shabari can just offer food from her own mouth to Lord Ramchandra. He will accept it. Shabari dattatala shana rama in Ramayana Vishkar. But we cannot do like that. Because we don't have so much devotion. So we have to express our devotion by our external conformity to rules and regulations. So the strictness of our rules of following and regulations, that is prayatatmanaha. So that will also please Krishna. Now when one doesn't have that bhakti, then what should one do? Krishna describes the next verse. The next verse is one level lower. Yat karoshi yad ashnasi yad juhosi vadasi yat yat tapasyasi kanteya tat kurushva madarpanam.
Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me.
So, now here is telling, whatever you do, if you cannot perform this act, simple act of offering to me with love, then whatever you are going to do, yat karo, shi rashna, si rajjuho, siddhasi yat. Tat kurushva madarpanam. So this is a lower level, this is not exactly karma yoga, because in karma yoga the object of worship may not be known. The object of worship may be Brahman, may be Paramatma, may be Bhagavan. It is that karma yoga, the emphasis is that I am not enjoying the fruits. She is saying, offer it to me. So bhakti yoga means, actually Chakravarti Pada has made an elaborate analysis about the level of this particular verse. But if we get time for the yoga later, we'll discuss that. But here, bhakti yoga is described in the previous verse. And normal karma yoga is described in the third chapter. One is detachment yoga. This is a transition between the two. This is that one is doing whatever one can do by offering it to Krishna. So this is slightly lower than Maam Anuspara Vidyacha. Maam Anuspara Vidyacha is first remember then fight. There is Tat Kurushu Madarpanam. Whatever you are doing, do and then offer to me. And what will be the result of this? Also Krishna will describe. This will also be a glorious result. If you just offer to me. Now interestingly in this verse, Krishna doesn't say that I accept the offering. That doesn't mean he rejects the offering. But Krishna, he says that I directly reciprocate for those who offer me with devotion. But even if you don't have devotion, you offer it to me. So generally when we offer, it is not that Krishna accepts our offering. Rather, when we offer it, we are spiritual master who adds the missing element of devotion. The all important missing element of devotion. And then Krishna accepts. When we offer it to me, Krishna is not assuring that I will accept. But still, if the act of offering will be a result. What will be that result? Shubha.
It is not just like
no, because it is being offered to Krishna. I tell you, in Nishkam Karma Yoga, the object of the worship is not known. Here it is clearly known to be Krishna. Yeah, correct.
Shubha Shubha Falairevam Mokshase Karma Bandhanai Sanyasa Yoga Yuktatma Vimukto Mamu Paishyasi.
If your mind puts on me in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and
come to me. So vimukto, there is a special liberation, not as ordinary liberation Brahman, vimukto. And what is the result of that? Maham upaishasi, you will come back to me. So you say, even by this level of practice, you will ultimately return to me. So now, after describing this, Krishna's heart is overflowing with devotion. And naturally at this point this question will come. You know, those who worship demigod, the continual cycle of birth and death. And somebody who worships even with less than percentage, still he will come back to using the discrimination. So this contrast is very glaring over here. So Krishna will address this issue of a partiality over here.
Samoham sarva bhuteshu name jeshosti napriyaha ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maite teshu chapyaham.
Yes. So Krishna is telling, yes, I am equal to everyone. This verse is understood at different levels. The first part will be spoken by Krishna as Paramatma. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dveshosti na priya. But yes, those are my devotees. Ye bhajanti. Tubam bhaktya. Yoda mai te teshu chaptyaham. So this actually is a very intimate union. The Mayavadis think of union in terms of merging. But Krishna is talking about loving union in terms of interpretation, interpenetration. Krishna says, I am in them and they are in me. They live in me, I live in them. This is deeper than union. Both of them exist, but both of them enter into each other's hearts. So, sadhavam hridayam manyam, sadhunam hridayam tadaham, but anyatyena janati naham tebhyo managapi. So in that sense, the two devotees are two, but they become one. So Krishna says, this is my special love for my devotees. And it's not partiality because I give the opportunity for everyone to become my devotee. That Krishna will address in the next verse. But in a couple of verses later Krishna will address that. How he keeps the department of devotion open to everyone. In that sense he's not partial. It's like, you know, in certain areas the rains fall more. In certain areas the rains fall less. Now the place where rains fall more, if the the government or king allows, whoever want, you can do your farming behavior. Then you stop. And then the other person gets a lot of crop, other person gets less crop. See, why is this discrimination? You know, you are allowed to come there. Why do you come there? No discrimination. It is just the way things are. So like that, Krishna says, that Krishna will tell how completely open the department of devotion is a little later. But here he will talk about the glory of devotion further. Apichet sudharacharo vajite mamananya bhav sadhureva samantavya samyagyavasito hi saha. Let's decide the next verse also, and we'll discuss. Shipram bhavati dharmatma shashvat chantim nigacchati santoya pratijani hi name bhakta pranashyati. So this verse is understood by Acharya at three different levels. So we'll discuss the way Prabhupada explains it, as Chakravarti Bhaya explains. We'll discuss how Sridhar Swami explains it. We'll discuss how Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains it. So, very important words. Now, Prabhupada explains that sometimes a devotee may commit some sinful activities because of past conditionings. And those sort of unplanned, unpremeditated sins should not be seen as a permanent blemish or disqualification, but should continue to see the devotional attitude and devotional activity of such a person. And Prabhupada himself was very, very compassionate in that sense. Prabhupada engaged people who were from a very, very difficult background, and they had very tough conditionings. Some of them fell back. But Prabhupada was always very encouraging. In fact, you know, if some devotee has some difficulties, the worst thing that we can do for that devotee is speak about the difficulty to others. There was one devotee who had some difficulty, and he was a sannyasi. So he sent his sannyasanda back to Prabhupada by post. And then Prabhupada's secretary was there with him, and Prabhupada got that not Prabhupada's mail came to him. So that devotee read that mail and he started speaking it to everyone. And when he spoke that to everyone, Prabhupada was more angry with this person who spoke it than the person who actually did something wrong. Prabhupada told him, you have made it impossible for him to come back. So Prabhupada, well, if somebody would criticize the devotee, Prabhupada would say that actually, you know, they are trying to serve Krishna, that is their glory. So of course, the Prabhupada also hoped that devotees will become spotless in their character so that they will bring glory to him. So Prabhupada's glory is that even if the devotee is deficient, he should defend them. But what will the disciples' glory? Disciples' glory is that they actually become true representatives of the spiritual master and they become spotless. Here Krishna is emphasizing the love of his love of the Lord, the spiritual master, the representative of the Lord. That's why I'm giving the example of Prabhupada's love over here. That apichet suduracharo. That even if somebody is not just duracharo, suduracharo, very bad activity he does. Apichet vajate mam ananya bhav. He continues in my devotional service, then he should be considered a sadhu, a great soul. Eva samantavya. So, mantavya is like an instruction here. He should be considered to be a sadhu. Why? Because samyat vadasito hi sahi. Determination is rightly placed. So as sadhakas, we can always have our past conditionings coming and knocking us down. And today we may jeer and laugh at somebody else who is knocked down. But tomorrow it will be that we may get knocked down. So therefore our attitude towards somebody who is struggling should not be one of scorn, but one of sympathy. And we encourage each other in our struggle against Maya. Now, this so Chakravarti Pada explains that. No, Arjuna says, but Krishna, how can somebody who is misbehaving be considered to be a devotee? So when Arjuna answers, Krishna answers by saying, Kshipram bhavati dharmatma. That is just temporary. It will go away very soon. It will not stay for very long. And then Arjuna says, okay, if it goes away, then we can call him dharmatma. But what if the bad behavior doesn't go away? So Krishna sort of gets angry and says, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. Upon all of it, that my devotee will never perish. Why will never perish? Because sooner or later, that attraction to Krishna will bring him back to Krishna lotus feet. The soul always has free will. And because the soul has free will, he can always abuse that free will and go whichever direction he wants. For as long as he wants. But what happens is, because he has tasted Krishna consciousness, he will not be happy in that direction. And he will come back soon. So, when Giriraj Maharaj had gone back to America, parents had come to India. They said, why doesn't our son come back to us? What happened was his parents were very wealthy. So they came and his father gave a blank check to Prabhupada. He said, you give my son back. So Prabhupada said, I'm not keeping your son. If he wants, if he's your son, you can take him back. So Prabhupada very nicely dealt with them, and after Giriraj Maharaj came, Prabhupada told him, you know, the parents had given a blank check to me. So Prabhupada could have kept the check, I would also come back after. So, but then Prabhupada told him, they're very nice people. When you go to America, you should go and meet them. So because Prabhupada instructed, he went to America. So when he went to meet his parents, at that time, they had got a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist was trying to, he was thinking that this boy's brain was, so we had to deprogram him. So then she started talking, and he was just, whatever she was speaking was refuting with Bhagavad Gita system, headache, you know, philosophy and analysis. And after 45 minutes she came, they were in a room together, she just came running out. And so the parents asked, what happened? So she said, I told her, your son is permanently infected. If I stay with him, I will also get infected. I'm going now. So, Krishna consciousness is like a permanent infection. So somebody else may try to force us to take us away from Krishna, or we may also try to go away from Krishna. But Krishna consciousness is a permanent infection. We cannot go away. So, there is one lecture of Maharaj called us, the fallen devotee is most miserable. A very beautiful lecture. The Maharaj says that, if you have any plans to enjoy sense gratification, I'm sorry to inform you, it is too late. You have already chanted Hare Krishna. Because Krishna has accepted you as your own, now you cannot go back. And even if you go, you will suffer so much and you will come back. So it's best to not go. So in that sense, this verse is not a license or a sanction for a devotee's wrongdoing. This verse is speaking of Krishna's glory. The glory of Krishna's bhakti, that Krishna continues to consider him saintly and Krishna's bhakti will drag him back to Bhavati Dharmatma. So, Jiva Goswami says that apichet means even though, so it's not even if, but even though. What is the difference? That normally devotee behavior is exemplary, but even though sometimes he will have occasionally wrongly, that is not considered to be a blemish. You should not consider him to be non-saintly. Now, Shuddha Swami says that there is a contradiction here. How can somebody be Sudaracharo and Ananya Bhak? If somebody is doing Bhajate Ananya Bhak, undeviating bhakti, then how can he be Sudaracharo? It doesn't make sense. So he has a very beautiful insight. He says, if you look at this whole section, Krishna is contrasting demigod worship with his own worship. So he is saying Ananya Bhak means as a person does not worship anybody else. He does not give up the worship of Krishna. He does not give up the process of bhakti and think that I have to follow some other process. My condition is too strong. I have to practice yoga. I have to practice doing this. I have to do that. No. Ananya Bhak. So that's how he reconciles this. That actually a devotee says fixed in Krishna's service, no matter what is the difficulty. Now Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a very esoteric understanding. He said that actually one who is bhajate maam ananya bhak can never be Sudhiracharo. So he is saying this verse is talking not about the actual conduct of a devotee of Sudhiracharo, it is talking about the world's perception. So he is saying this refers to the Vraja Gopis. But they were bhajate maam ananya bhak, but the world thought they are Sudhiracharo. They left their husbands and parents and everywhere and went down into the jungle. So, sadhurava samantavya. So, shudhavadya sadhurava samyamgava sutravisa. They are completely fixed in their devotional service. And then he says that actually the gopis of their ananya bhak tend to become a dharmatma on a lower level. Bhakti is far higher than a dharmatma. He says, how can somebody become a dharmatma? So he says, this is referring not to the gopis, but to those who consider them sadhurava samantavya. They will become dharmatma very soon. So, those who proclaim, those who understand that they are gopis, that beloved devotees, whatever happens, they are sadhus. They will, those who accept like this, Shitram Bharati Dharmatma Shashwat Chantim Nikashati. They will quickly become Dharmatma and they will become liberated. Shashwat Chantim Nikashati. Just by glorifying the Gopi's law, they will become liberated. And therefore he says, Kauteya Pradhyani Namo Vakta Pradhyashati. So he says, Namo Vakta Pradhyashati is, I now declare the glory of my Gopis. Of this is a very sweet understanding of this verse. Now, yeah. No, he says that Sudhasarami is wrong behavior. That's proper immoral behavior is there. No, so he's saying, so what is Ananya Bhav? Ananya Bhav is that their Ananyata is that they don't worship somebody else. They're devotees of Krishna, they do something wrong. So the first understanding is that because of their past conditioning they're overboard and they do something wrong, but that is just a temporary lapse. So when they say the Ananya Bhav or the Samyak Vyavasthita Hisata, that basically means their overall orientation. They may occasionally fall prey to wrong desires, but they are not permanently sinful. They don't desire to continue a sinful life for long. So that in I was talking earlier about, you know, we have occasional desires and we have regular desires. Now occasionally we may overpower the rest, but regularly we will fight off lust. So it is talking about that. The first case. Second case is that, but still it's not just regular desires, it's undeviated worship. One doesn't get deviated. See, undeviated does not necessarily mean pure. Pure means not a desire. Undeviated means there is no breakage. That means worship somebody else. Avyabhichari bhakti is not kevala bhakti. If you have to explain simply. Later on. We'll talk about the purpose of prabhijari bhakti. It's not kevala bhakti. Avyabhichari bhakti is what Gyanis practice. Krishna talks about in 13 chapter twice. 13 chapter once, 14 chapter once. That is not kevala bhakti. So Krishna is talking about that. Undeviated in the sense of not going to anybody else. So now Krishna is saying that the connection in the next section is that, next two verses from the section, is that here Krishna is saying that by devotees we have some occasional faults in the terms of misbehavior. But, yeah? Oh, the common ground is that all acharyas glorify Krishna. I mentioned that at the start of the class itself, that ultimately all acharyas, Krishna is unlimited, and Krishna's words may reveal different meanings. Krishna may reveal his own wisdom. See, when Krishna speaks also, his speech is very profound. There can be meanings at multiple levels in it. So Krishna can mean this also, and Krishna can mean that also. So, now, because Krishna is unlimited, one acharya may see one particular meaning, another acharya may see another particular meaning. But the common basis is that they are all concluding in the glorification of Krishna in the service of Krishna.
I understand that. But when we are discussing multiple acharya's commentary, when we use one word, like when you said, kevala bhakti is not necessarily as a different word, it may not be all acharya's common conclusion.
Okay, that's a good point now. We go in because you have asked this question. See, the Avyabhichari Bhakti comes in two levels. And it's talking about two places in the Bhagavad Gita. One is in the 20 symptoms of knowledge, 13.8-12. And then 14.26, where it talks about transcending the modes. So now, what Krishna says is, that in both places, he says, by Avyabhichari Bhakti, one will come to Brahman level. Actually the man Chivabhicharana Bhakti Yoga Sevate Sagunan Samti Chetan Brahma Bhuvaya Kalpate. Normally the Avyabhichari Bhakti should go to the spiritual world. If Kevala Bhakti will not just bring us to the modes, to above the modes. If you see Krishna saying that, he says Brahma Bhuvaya Kalpate, but in 18th chapter, 54-55 says that after one comes to the Brahman level, ब्रह्मभूत प्रसन्न आत्मा शोषित कांक्षित नम सर्वेश भूतिश मत भक्ति लभते परम. सो दिस इज परा भक्ति. सो दैट मीन्स बाय अव्यभिचारी भक्ति वन कम्स टू द ब्रह्मन प्लेटफॉर्म एंड वन वन कम्स टू द ब्रह्मन प्लेटफॉर्म देन परा भक्ति बिगिन्स. So in that sense, this is not just interpretation of an acharya, this is inherent in the Bhagavad Gita itself. Now you look at avyabhichari. The word itself means uninterrupted or undeviated. It does not mean unmotivated. See, when we say that the fourth recommended principle is avyabhichari. That means, you know, a man or a married man or woman should not have a relationship with somebody else. That does not mean that a married man or woman are completely like selfless, pure servants of one another. That is the only expectation over there. So the word vyabhichara itself has a particular meaning. And that is more or less universal. I have not seen any other acharya contradicting that. Here something else. So by avyabhichari bhakti, we will transcend the lower modes and come to goodness and Brahman platform. And then from there, we will move forward by parabhakti. Is it clear? So, shall we move forward? Now, so I was saying that these are occasional behavioral faults, but Krishna says some of them have inherent faults. Inherent faults in the sense that they may have low births. Even those can be overcome by the power of bhakti. So occasional faults can be overcome by the power of bhakti, incidental faults and inherent faults. So there are two kinds of faults, incidental and inherent. So inherent faults can also be overcome by the power of bhakti. That's what it is called, the next verse. मामि पार्थ व्यापाशित ये पिस्युपापयोनयः प्रियो वैश्य तथा शूद्रः हेति यान्ति करां गतिम्. So generally the lower the birth. So here Krishna seems to equate the varana with the birth. So Krishna always said chaturvarnamasyam guna karma vyavasha. So yepisyu papayonaya striyo vaishyas vashudras. So it seems that stri vaishya shudra, they are papayoni itself. So it's from birth. So then is the varana determined by birth or is it by guna karma? So the standard Vedic understanding is that that the guna karma will be congruent with janma. Because when a Brahmana and a Brahmani unite, they will do proper garbhadhan sanskar and correspondingly they will attract a soul which will have Brahmanical qualities. So in that sense, generally speaking, if you look at the Rig Veda scriptures, son of a Brahmana is considered to be a Brahmana. Son of a Kshatriya is considered to be a Kshatriya. But it's not that he by default becomes a Kshatriya. He is expected to become a Kshatriya and most of the time he will become a Kshatriya. But what was the bane of the caste system was that the passing down of the authority was institutionalized and the transition was banned, which is wrong. So yes, in general, if a doctor's son, for example, is not always a doctor, you know, automatically become a doctor. But a doctor's son can have a head start over many others if he wants to become a doctor. Because the culture, the assistance, the guidance, everything is much more readily available. So now here Krishna is telling that the lower modes, the lower varanas, generally a stri is not considered to have any separate varana. The stri has the varana of her husband. So that means a brahmana's wife will be a brahmani. But by herself, the female body, because it brings a huge amount of bodily misidentification. For a female, her whole sense of self-worth and self-identity comes from her body. For a man, it's not just his body, it's the earning capacity, it is intelligence, it is business skills, administration skills, so many things come up. But for a woman, her first and foremost sense of identity and worth comes from her body. And that's why in the female body, to give up the body identification is much more difficult than in the male body. So in that sense, women can be considered to be less intelligent. Because the identification is far, far greater. Because that's the way the society is. And especially the female, the identification of the body is very strong. So that's why, because that identification is very strong, this female form is grouped with Vaishyas and Shudras. But Krishna is saying that even they can be elevated. So Krishna will glorify bhakti in two ways. One way is that how low can one be going down for bhakti to pick up? And second will be how high bhakti can take one up. So here he is talking about how low one may be, but one will pick up. Second, later on he will talk about how when a bhakti will take us beyond Brahman, beyond Paramatma, beyond Vaikuntha, even to Goloka. So in that sense, this is a double way of glorifying bhakti. So here is saying that the power of bhakti is so much that no matter how low it is, one can be elevated. And therefore, Krishna says to Arjuna, therefore prasam bhakti. That was also here. Kim punar brahmana punya bhaktya rajirishvastatha anityam adukam lokam
imamadatya najasvamam. How much more did you show of the righteous brahmanas, the devotees and the sanctity? Therefore, having come to this temporary miserable world, engaged in loving service unto me.
So, if the power of bhakti can elevate even those who are so fallen, kim punar brahmana punya, what to speak of pious brahmanas, rajarishis tatha. So Arjuna is a rajarishi. So certainly you are much more qualified to practice bhakti. You will surely be elevated. And it is, anyway, so this is the second time when Krishna talks about the nature of this world. There is a Dukkhali, Saishatamani 8.15, now it is anityam asukham lokam. So Krishna is again drawing a quick contrast over here. That if you don't practice bhakti, it is very dukkhala vishashvatam. Therefore, practice bhakti in the power of this world. This is the easiest way to come out. And Prabhupada writes in the purport very beautifully, he says, in this world there are differences. Rich, poor, good looking, ugly, intelligent, foolish. But ultimately, this world is a place of misery for everyone. Whether a person is wealthy or poor, it's a place of misery for everyone. So therefore, he says, best is to transcend this world. And then, now Krishna will conclude. So, Nam Prapta Bhajasvama. So how is this bhajat to be done? This verse is actually the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. Saradharantra is the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, but this is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. And this verse will be repeated almost verbatim in 18.65. Nam mana bhava madhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru amaya vaishyati yuktamtu atma aham mattarayanaha. Yes. So, this verse is talking about four main components. Man mana, always think of me. So both Baldev Vidyabhushan and Madhusudana said the example that a servant of a king will also think of the king. But his mind will be with his wife at home. So bhavamad bhakto. Don't just think of me, offer your heart to me. And what is the expression of offering the heart? Madhyaji, sacrifice for me. So Vyaji can mean yagya or it can mean the activity of sacrifice. Sacrifice your own pleasure, sacrifice your own possessions for my sake. And Maam Namaskuru. Namaskuru means actually no, not mine. Just offer your full existence to me. Maam Evaishasi Yuktvaivam. In this way if you do, you engage Atmanam Matparayanaha. You will surely return back to me. So, Krishna's heart is flooding with emotions. Because he is ultimately, Radharani is closest to heart and Bhakti is closest to his heart. So, after describing this, while waiting for Arjuna to ask any questions, Krishna continues on. And he speaks the next chapter. So this chapter was called as the most confidential knowledge. Now, the second, of the opinions of the Absolute. Vibhutiyam, this is called in Sanskrit. Yeah?
If you offer your name, so does it mean that those who are born in Shudra, Vaishya,
generally it is the understanding that the Kunti Maharaj is from Janma Ishwar Shuddha Shribhir. So these four are the result of our past karma. So if somebody is born in a particular body or a particular family, particular lineage, that is the result of the past karma. So just as if somebody is born in a wealthy king's family, that's good, that means that's good karma. So somebody born in a poor Shudra family, that is bad karma. So yes, it is a result of one's past karma.
Because this verse may be quoted by the religious and answer. But Krishna himself is satisfying all papa in
okay, yeah. So in modern times you have to be very politically correct. So the idea is that everything that is taught in the scripture has its emphasis. So the emphasis here is not that they are papi only. The emphasis here is that whatever they are, they can be elevated. The emphasis is that. But now, is it papi only? See, it's an uncomfortable philosophical truth that suppose somebody dies in a tsunami. Now, it will be very politically incorrect to say that, jo, jinka paap tha, wo mar gaye. You should never say like that. But still, we have to give education. See, one of the problems with the law, with understanding the law of karma is that it should not be administered, explored, explained in a heartless way. Simple example is, if it is a doctor, and some patient comes to him with, say, some sexually transmitted disease. And the doctor is a very righteous, religious person. Hey, you rascal, you committed sinful activity, suffer and die now. Apna karam mukti do. Well, the doctor cannot say that. The doctor has to treat. That is his duty. Now, if the doctor doesn't give treatment and is heartless, he is failing his duty. On the other hand, if the doctor gives treatment but does not tell the patient the cause of his suffering, then also he is failing his duty. The doctor has to also tell, you know, you did this behavior, so you got this disease. And therefore, if you want to avoid the recurrence of this disease, please give up this. So, if the doctor only does the second part, that you because of this you are suffering, you suffer. That is a very heartless way of doing things. So, the law of karma is not so much about placing the blame on anyone for what is happening, but it is more about making the right choice now. Very important part. The stress of the law of karma is not to place the blame on anyone. The stress of the law of karma is to make the right choice now onwards. So the same principle, somebody suffers, some people die in tsunami. Now, as devotees at that time, we should not give a lecture saying that how, like, where was this, what was that? Ranan Maharaj gave that lecture on, when, what happened?
Japan,
that time, and before also, Japan. So, you know, if you see that time when he spoke, Japan earthquake tsunami happened, not one word about karma over there. You know, it is basically, yes, we should go out of, we should do all that we can to help them. Why? Because there is a time and place to speak philosophy. And also, it's not that other times you don't speak philosophy, but what philosophical point to speak? That is also important. So, if somebody is just, is how you can speak the right philosophy at the wrong time. If some say a devotee has some relative passed away and is very deeply affected by that. So generally speaking at that time, now we have to console that person, and after consolation there can be enlightenment. You remember I told earlier there is encouragement and enlightenment, both have to be there. The only encouragement you are failing in the duty. If you are doing only enlightenment, you will be emotionally lacking. Our message will not go through. So, when we are talking about law of karma, it's not heartless. We also show that we also want to help people. So, Krishna is talking here, yes, it is true. It is a fact. That if somebody is born with a particular deficiency, the cause is certain bad karma in the previous life. But the important thing is, that bad karma need not limit us now. Because bhakti can empower us in extraordinary ways. So, you know, in the West there is this whole idea that the law of karma will be psychologically damaging. Because children, suppose some child is born, say blind, and then you tell him, because of your own sinfulness you are born blind. So see how it is in Christian religion, sin is considered to be an inherent trait. Because Adam and Eve rebelled against God, say all of us are inherently sinful. And Christianity flourishes by creating guilt consciousness among people. Now you are all guilty, you are hopelessly guilty, you are inherently guilty. And if you don't surrender to Jesus, you are going to burn in the fires of hell forever. So, it's not to criticize Christianity, but that is their basic understanding. So their idea is somehow that that original sin of Jesus has passed down to all of us like a genetic defect, generation after generation. So all of us are inherently sinful because we don't accept past bad karma. So they have, so you know, Christianity flourishes by creating guilt consciousness. And when people hear about the law of karma, they think it is another tool to create guilt consciousness. But it is not. Actually, the knowledge of karma is very empowering. No. One time I was traveling, I met one atheist, so he told me, you know, so you believe in the law of karma? I said, of course. So doesn't that, so you are asking, so you have this pain, doesn't it make you feel guilty? He said, no, it makes me feel relieved. Because for 20 years of my life, I never understood why I had this deficiency. But when I understand it, it helps me to feel empowered because I know that my choices have consequences. And I can change my future by making the right choices. So we are not passing blame to anyone. So, but the law of karma has got a lot of bad press because of unsympathetic speaking about it. So we are not, purpose of the law of karma is not to place the blame on anyone. The purpose of the law of karma is to avoid wrong choices and make right choices. So if you understand this purpose very clearly, then we will be very sympathetic. Otherwise, in the law of karma, he is very heartless. A kills B. Why? We are supposed to die. So why should there be any government then? No. A kills B. B is supposed to die, but A doesn't have to take the law in hand to kill B. Because A has done wrong, now he is in bad karma. He will have to suffer. So the law of karma has to be spoken about in a very sympathetic and a very compassionate way. No, it's not just an objective philosophical truth. It's actually more of a science of choices. It's more of not causes but choices. The law of karma focuses not on causes but on choices for us. Okay, let's move forward now. So now Krishna starts with the 10th chapter where he just continues with his ecstasy. And he says, Uyaiva Mahabaho श्रुणु मे परम वचः यत्तेऽहं प्रियमाणाय वक्ष्यामि हित काम्यय. So it seems a little contradictory, bhuya and paramam. So again I am speaking, but it is the highest knowledge. That means actually we are going to speak it deeper. Because Priya Satyam is Guhya Tama. The topmost Ajudya Raja Guhyam. So Guhya knowledge. Paramam Vachaha. These are my supreme instructions. Why am I speaking this? I have nothing to gain. Teham Priyamana. Because I love you. Vakshami Hitakamaya. So Krishna is speaking out of selfless love. And he will speak his own, he will speak about his supreme position to bring out the supreme position of bhakti once again. Name Vidhu Suraganaha. प्रभवं न महर्षयः अहम् आदिर्ह देवानां महर्षीणां च सर्वशः. So the demigods are very powerful, but by their power they cannot know Krishna. The sages are very knowledgeable, but even by their knowledge they cannot know Krishna. In that sense, neither by power nor by knowledge can one know Krishna. It is only by bhakti. So Krishna will contrast now the position of the demigods with his own position. Yo mama jamana dimcha vetti loka maheshwaram asam murha samarteshu sarva papai pramuchyate. So now this verse describes partial result of knowing Krishna. So in the 7th verse Krishna will describe the full result of knowing him. The first result is sarva papai pramuchyate. You become free from all sinful reactions. Now Krishna is contrasted with the demigods over here by saying that the demigods have an adi, but he is anadi. He is the adi of the demigod, but he himself is anadi. Yoma majan vetti loka maheshwaram. He is the lord of all the liberated souls might be ajam and anadi. But Krishna, they are not Loka Maheshwara. Krishna, the distinctive position he brings out. And then he will describe how he is the Adi, aham Adir hi devanam maheshinam cha sarvasha. So he is not only the Adi of the Devas, but he is also the Adi of all things, even all qualities in this world. So everything that is there in this world, he is a, how he is the source, he will describe by describing various qualities in this world now. Buddhir jnanam asammoha, shama satyam damashama, sukham dukham bhavo bhavo, bhavam cha vayameva cha, ahimsa samata tushti, tapodanam yasho yashaha, anti bhava bhutanam, atta eva prithagvidaha. So, Krishna is saying, all these are created by me. That means, buddhir, jnana, asammoha. Prabhupada differentiates very differently between these three, the purport. Knowledge is theoretical. Buddhi, or intelligence, is more, is like active knowledge. The ability to see things in perspective. That means, jnana, buddhir, jnana means, okay, if a Vaishnava comes, I should offer obeisances to him. So I'm doing deity worship, I should move the diya like this. But if when I am doing deity worship, at that time a Vaishnava comes, what should I do? So, should I continue the deity worship or should I go down? So, to weigh the jnana and to see things in their proper perspective. What is more important, what is less important? So that is, Prabhupada explains, buddhi. So jnana is theoretical knowledge, buddhi is more of active knowledge, it's intelligence. And asammoha, the freedom from doubt, comes by the practice of sadhana. Now Krishna is describing all these three are a result of goodness. But by all these come from me, so by all these I cannot be known. He describes, I can be known only in pinpointed by the Dhamma Buddhi Yogantam. They are all helpful, they are virtuous because they are in goodness, and all the qualities more or less are described in goodness, but by them they cannot know Krishna. And then Krishna will describe further how he is the source of all the Devas and the Rishis, especially the Rishis. Maharshaya sapta purve chatvaro manavastata madhava manasa jata yesham loka ima praja. So Prabhupada writes, Krishna is giving a genealogical synopsis of the universe. So if you read the third canto of Bhagavatam, we'll know how the different living entities are created in the universe. And these 11 personalities, Mahashisapur, Chatvaro Manasata, they are all the primary people from whom the whole universe gets populated. So in that sense, Krishna is the source of everyone. So, Madhava Manasa Yata. He says, I am born from my mind because Brahmaji is born as a son of Krishna, and from Krishna, Brahmaji does not have any. Brahmaji creates all the living beings by the will of Krishna. So Krishna says, Rochayam, Rochayamiham. The seed is already given and I just manifest the seed. So it is by Krishna's plan. It is not that all of them are Krishna Manasputra, but it is by Krishna's plan that they are created. It is called Madhava Manasagata. They are all born from my mind. And then now Krishna will describe the full result of knowing him. Etam Vibhutim Yogam Cha. Mama yogeti tattvataha, so vikalpena yogena, yujyate natra samshayaha. So, so vikalpena yogena, there is no other vikalpa. You know, once one understands Krishna's glories in this way, there's nobody else to serve. He's, everything else is just meaningless and he's such a wonderful Lord. So now he will bring speak the Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita. The heart of the Bhagavad Gita in one sense. It is both Ramacharya, Vishnachakra calls it the Chatushloki. Ramacharya also calls it the Chatushloki. Of course, Vishnachakra also will talk about Trishloki Gita. Our Acharyas will talk about the 15th chapter. But this is very important. And this talks about Sambandha Videya Prayojan. Talks about the totality of bhakti.
अहम सर्वस्य प्रभवो मत्तः सर्वं प्रवर्तते इति मत्वा भजन्ते माम् उदाभाव समन्विता। So Prabhupada's purport focuses elaborately on how Krishna is the highest truth. Aham sarvasya prabho. Now mattaha sarvam pravartate, in one sense it seems to be like a repetition. Everything comes from me and all things come from me, something like that. So actually pravartate means, in one sense it is, samacharya take it to mean maintained by me. So mattaha aham sarvasya prabho, all things come from me. And all the processes of bhakti and other processes of sadhana, they also come from me. So even when a devotee wants to serve Krishna, actually the inspiration for serving Krishna also comes from Krishna. It comes from the spiritual master, from the Vaishnava, from the super soul. So in that sense, Krishna is the source of all things in this world. And how to return back to Krishna, that intelligence also comes from him. Matta sarvam pravartate. Iti matva, one who understands it, bhajante maam. So, buddha bhava samanvitaha. So bhava samanvitaha is described in the next verse. And Buddha is described in the next two verses. So this verse describes Sambandha and Abhideya. How Sambandha Jnana leads to Abhideya. Sambandha Jnana, that Krishna is the source of everything, leads to service to Krishna. And Abhideya is that they engage in devotional service. So next verse will describe a blend of Abhideya and Prayojan. Machitta madgata prana bodhayanta parasparam कथयन्तश्च माम् नित्यम् पुष्यन्ति च रमन्ति च। सो मच्चित्त मद्गत प्राण। सो बेसिकली दिस इज माइंड बॉडी एंड speech, all three are described. Sitandi Sannyasi, Machitta, Madhgata Prana refers to the body and the entire lifespan. And Bodhyanta Parasparam speech, so everything is offered. So, Machitta, Madhgata Prana, Bodhyanta Parasparam. And so this Chakravarti is in three primary devotional activities are described over here. Smaran, Kirtan and Shravan. And this Bodhyanta Parasparam, the Kathayanta is Kirtan, Bodhyanta is Shravan, and Machitta is Smaran. So all three are described. Three principal activities of bhakti are described. And then Ramanti. So Ramanti or Gaudiya Acharya named it Radhika Raman. So Raman especially refers to delighting in. So just as the Vraj Gopis delight, do conceive for them Krishna is the source of all Ramana. So pure devotee does Raman in Krishna. So pure devotee cannot live outside Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti has described that. But we generally give the example of fish out of water. Now we don't feel like fish out of water. We feel quite comfortable in material life. But a pure devotee actually feels like fish out of water. Why? Because the material conditioning has gone off and so he constantly feels separation from Krishna. He longs to be with Krishna. And then after that Krishna will describe that now the question may come up that you are saying that just by knowing your supreme position they will become devotees and they will worship. What about their jnana? Isn't jnana very important? Krishna said that jnana is included in bhakti. Just by the bhakti they will get jnana. Tesham satata yuktana bhajatam priti purvakam dham buddhi yogam tam
yena mam upayanti te.
Those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me.
So now the Mayavadi started to interpret this verse to show that actually bhakti results in jnana. They say that bhakti is higher, first you do all this kathayanta, trupta and pushyanti ramanti and then you will get buddhi. But the problem with that interpretation is that Krishna is saying satata yuktana. It's not that after they give bhakti, they are always engaged in bhakti. And he is saying yena maam upayanti, they come to me, they don't go into tena brahmal, sannidhyamsi tahoya brahma, they are coming back to me. And upayanti is not at all anything to do with merging. So Prabhupada would very often quote this verse, especially in his letters to devotees. Whenever a devotee would come up with some intelligent plan for preaching Krishna consciousness, so, yes, because you are sincere, Krishna is giving you intelligence. How to serve Krishna, how to serve him better and better. So actually Krishna is alive and active in our heart. And if you just try to desire, if you just desire to serve him better, Krishna can give amazing intelligence of how we can serve him. So, this intelligence, as preachers, we can experience when we speak or answer questions. We find that Krishna has a divine sense of presence of mind to answer right questions. But similarly, when we try to make plans for Krishna, for serving him, Krishna will give intelligence. And the whole history of ISKCON is how devotees, in one sense, were unequipped for doing anything even material. They did something extraordinary. Like the devotees, they made this whole New Vrindavan Palace of Gold. So they had no architecture over there. And they made such an extraordinary temple, like when it was inaugurated, the New York Times called it the Taj Mahal of the West. So, it's not just that, but there are many other places where devotees who had practically no knowledge of anything, they were interested, they took the responsibility to try to serve Krishna, and they became super efficient and extraordinary in that field. How devotees distributed books. Now, there are Bhagavans telling that there were several devotees, when they would be distributing books in airports, many big marketing companies, top officers would operate, and the way you distribute books, you come and join us, we will pay you so much. He said, no, because you know, Krishna has given them intelligence how to distribute books. So, Adami Buddhi Yogantam. Now, the next verse basically expands. How does Krishna give that Buddhi? It's because, so if there is any doubt, if there is no verse till now, that Krishna has said that I am present in the heart of everyone. In the first time, you have said that Lord is present in the heart, but you have not said I am present in the heart. He makes it very clear, and I give the intelligence of within the heart. Teshamevanukampartham aham ajnana jantamah nashayami atma bhavastho jnana deepena bhasvatah. Srila Prabhupada quotes in the purport that sometimes people think that devotees are sentimentalists. Prabhupada is aware of these Mayavadi ideas. They say that because you don't have intelligence, you do bhakti, after that you will get intelligence. And Prabhupada says, devotees are very, very intelligent. But here Krishna is glorifying his bhakti by saying that even if somebody is not intelligent, he can practice. And Krishna will give him intelligence. That doesn't mean that devotees don't have intelligence. The most intelligent people become devotees. But bhakti is so glorious that even the least intelligent people can also become devotees. See, how can we say most intelligent people become devotees? Bahunam jnanavante jnanavan mam prapadyate. So when one person becomes jnanavan, one becomes devotee. That means bhakti is so glorious that when one becomes most intelligent, he will become a devotee. But bhakti is so glorious that even a less intelligent people can become, person can become a devotee, and he will become intelligent by bhakti. So now, at this point, the Bhagavad Gita is more or less over. But Arjuna asks some questions because for our sake now, by which he expands. So Krishna, what Arjuna will say at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Nishto Moho Smitir Labdha. He says something very much like that. Or he doesn't say that, but it's clear that his moha is gone, at least about Krishna's supreme position. Krishna does not conclude this with our Arjuna fight. So, but Krishna's supreme position is clear, and Arjuna will verify that. And sometimes some people ask, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita can have many interpretations. Your interpretation is one interpretation. How can you say your interpretation is the correct interpretation? They say, okay, yes, it can have many interpretations, but Bhagavad Gita is a conversation. And if you want to understand the Bhagavad Gita, let us see what is the understanding of the original Srimad-Bhagavad Gita. So the original Srimad-Bhagavad Gita, he never says that Krishna will merge into you. He never goes into jungle and Ashtanga Yoga. He practices bhakti. So in that sense, you know, if I tell you something, and you tell that person, you tell that person, you tell that person, and by the time it is there, and what that person is hearing is entirely different from what you heard. And you can tell, you know, what you're hearing is not correct. Now you say, no, but it got changed. How it got changed? Because people distorted it. But if what you are hearing here is the same what I heard there, then nothing will change. So this example illustrates both points. How our understanding has to be the same as the understanding of the new student, and how can we know that in the parampara, like Chinese whispers, things have not got changed. Why? Because we see what is the understanding of ISKCON devotees today. They also understand Krishna is the Supreme Lord. They give up all other dharmas, it's become devotees of Krishna. Sarva dharman, paritya, they give up demigod worship, they give up whatever, semi-god worship. everything just sticks on Krishna's service. So in that sense, the Bhagavad Gita may be very complicated scripture in terms of its analysis, but in terms of its conclusion, it is crystal clear. Let's see what is Arjuna's conclusion now. Arjuna Vacha, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavan, Purusham Shashvatam Devyam, Adideva Majam Vibhum, Ahustam Rishaya Sarve, Devarshina Rastata, Asiko Deva Lovyasa, Swayam Chaiva Pravishime.
Arjuna says, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages, such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyasa, perform the truth about you. And now you yourself are declaring it to me.
So, you know, Krishna, Arjuna, if you look at the Mahabharata, these sages have come at different places in the Mahabharata. Sita, Devala, Vyasa, Narada also. Narada and Vyasa are especially active. And they have spoken at different times in the Mahabharata Krishna's glories. Because of the Yoga Maya, Arjuna had got covered. Arjuna is like saying, yes, now I understand what you say is true, and I have heard this from others also. And later on we will see that in the same chapter, Krishna will talk about his vibhutis. So, Muninam Appiham Vyasa, and Devarishima Mahanarada. So two of these sages will mention as Krishna Vibhuti also later. So what is Krishna being understood? Param Brahma. Yes, Prabhupada is Brahma and Param Brahma. So Prabhupada told the Madhya Mayavadi's logic. I am Brahma, God is Brahma, therefore I am God. So what is that logic like? I am the Prime Minister. I am the Indian, the Prime Minister is Indian, therefore I am Prime Minister. So this is finished logic. So Param Brahma is different from Brahma. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma. As a supreme abode. Now the word dhamma, according to the traditional Chakravarti Thakur says, it also means form. You are the supreme form. Param dhamma, pavitram paramam bhavan. So he says that you are the supremely pure and purifying. Purusham shashvatam divyam. Very clearly, you are a person. And what kind of person? Not just a transitional utilitary idea of personhood. Remains into Brahman. Shashvatam divyam. So he makes his position very clear.